Hey girl, hey, and welcome to Lay Do You Remember This? It's me, your host, your friend,
your lover,
Darlene Sussman. And this week, it's another change up, another switch up. If you know me, if you love me, if you love this podcast, you know that my brand is chaos. And two episodes ago, did I announce my co-host for this season? Yes. Three episodes later, am I already doing a solo episode? Sure. Kelsey couldn't join me this week, so yeah, I'm riding solo today. Something I've only really done on Patreon, which, shout out to the Patreon. We got some fun stuff going on over there if you want to check it out. The most recent bonus episode I threw it up. But my most recent episode is really fun, and for all you Playboy heads out there, you're gonna love it. I talked to Daisy McManaman, who's a researcher and PhD student from the UK. Yeah, we're going international. We're very highbrow, but she's writing her PhD thesis on Playboy. So I just talked to her about all things Playboy, Girls Next Door, Girls Next Level. So if you want some Playboy content, a real meeting of the minds, a bimbo summit, if you will, go join the Patreon and give it a listen. I also have a lot of other great episodes, an episode also about Girls Next Level with Troy McKeady. There's another episode where I'm talking Britney with Tess Barker and Babs Gray. There's an America's Next Top Model Tyra Banks retrospective episode. So check that out if you feel so inclined. It's up to you. You have free will. You can do whatever you want. And if what you want is to give me a small cut of your hard-earned money, well, I won't say no. But today, in the here and now, I will be recapping episode 6 of A Shot at Love with Tila Tequila. And listen, I know it's impossible to find any episodes of A Shot at Love with Tila Tequila. Just another example of bi erasure. The show has pretty much been scrubbed from the internet. But if you need help finding it, mosey on over to my Instagram or my TikTok at LayDoYouRememberThis and send me a DM and I can point you in the right direction. And with that, let's jump into episode 6 of A Shot at Love with Tila Tequila. The episode opens in the morning as the contestants are brushing their teeth and getting ready for a fun-filled day of trying to prove that they're more inherently lovable than their fellow contestants and human beings.
There's a message in a bottle!
Message in a bottle!
It's from Tila!
I'm an exotic girl. It's time to prove you have exotic tastes. Are you ready to step up to the plate?
Hell yeah.
They go outside to the backyard and are met with a pretty gruesome sight. There's two long, like, banquet tables with seats for every person and silver platters with cloches on top of them. But the real centerpiece here is a skinned bull's head. Just an entire head with the eyes, a long tongue flapping out of its mouth. There's cockroaches and maggots in little jars. And just within the context of this time period, I knew instantly, I'm sure the contestants knew instantly, that they were about to have to eat some gross shit. In the early 2000s, if you, God forbid, were on a reality show and walked into a competition and there was a jar of bugs within a 100-mile radius, you knew that you're about to start eating some nasty shit. This is 2007, so we're like past the prime of Fear Factor, I would say, because just looking it up, Fear Factor ran from 2001 to 2006, and then it was revived in 2011 for a few seasons. But Fear Factor and Joe Rogan really had a chokehold on America. It was like a little preview of what was to come. We let the vampire into the house, and then he never left. And now we all just live in hell. There were so many reality shows that borrowed from Fear Factor and at least had a gross eating competition. Even Survivor, it was a mainstay of Survivor back then. And honestly, now that I think of it, this is something that's really interesting about the early 2000s in a very terrible and suspect cursed way, is I feel like torture porn in mainstream media was just such a big thing. Like, horror has such, like, a mainstream resurgence right now, but the type of horror that we have today is often more cerebral or fun and, like, with a comedic bent or really campy. But back in the early 2000s, I feel like a lot of the bread and butter was torture porn, gross out type of movies where it's like not even scary, it's just upsetting to watch. And also, we're also watching like Nip Tuck, where that show hinged so much on the gross out shots of surgery and like making the problems that the patients had, oftentimes like very gross, weird problems. Or even I feel like reality shows that had some sort of plastic surgery element, we were often seeing like people on the table getting cut and like real flesh, like totally gross out stuff. Or my God, wow, I could go on about this forever. Hoarders, like where they're getting the lowdown dirty shots of like, cat skulls rolling around underneath a dining room table. Everything was very gross. And it was all about like watching people suffer. Oh my God. Or then also Tub Girl or Faces of Death. That's gross out and like torture, or not torture, but like death. It's as a society, we were like, you know what? Let's try on human suffering for entertainment. Let's see how that hits. Well, that was a culture that I came of age in. Probably really good for the mental health and development of a young brain. But anyway, the contestants see everything and they know instantly what is about to befall them, and they're all freaking out. And Tila's giggling at all of their reactions, and then she gives the preamble to the significance of the competition.
So for my career, my lifestyle, I travel the globe all the time, all over the world, and I can't always have the foods that I want. And I want to make sure that you guys can handle life on the road with me.
This all makes complete sense to me. If you're a world traveler like Tila, then you understand what it's like to be in a foreign country and like, sorry, but they don't have your Erewhon Hailey Bieber smoothie at the ready. They don't have your sprouted cashews or your spirulina, and you're just going to have to make do. If these people are serious about wanting to create a life with Tila, world traveler that she is, a woman immersed in the culture, you can't be too precious about your gluten-free bread. You might go somewhere and they say, sorry, we can't accommodate your dietary restrictions because all that we have on the menu is bull testicle. And like, what are you going to do? Starve? Are you going to starve? No. You have to roll with it. That's what traveling is. Tila tells everyone that on their platter, underneath their cloche — Tila doesn't use the word cloche, that's me saying cloche, but Tila knows what that word is, of course. But in this moment, she has to dumb herself down to these pedestrians, knowing full well that whoever she chooses, she will be Eliza Doolittling, she will be molding into the highbrow, aristocratic, bourgeoisie partner that she's always dreamed of. But underneath said cloche, she reveals our bull testicles and bull penis that they will have to munch on. She doesn't explain how it will be served. I'm going to guess that it's sous vide, but we don't know specifically. But an interesting creative choice on the part of the editors is they start playing some kind of like royalty-free dupe version of the Indigo Girls. Like, it sounds very reminiscent of Closer I Am to Fine.
Whichever guy eats the fastest and whichever girl eats the fastest will face off in the next round.
This is the hardest thing I've ever had to do in my life. Like, for reals. I haven't eaten red meat in 15 years.
Poor, dear, sweet Amanda, my bimbo queen, is faced with a moral conundrum, a moral quandary. Now, I will just say, like, I have fully bought in now on my unabashed love for Amanda, so much so that I had to take another spin around Google to see what my girly has been up to all these years. On the show, they list her as a real estate agent, which I'm sure, I guess she was maybe at the time. But I found her LinkedIn, my smart little bimbo queen, smart little big little bimbo queen, got her MFA in nonfiction writing in 2013 to 2015 at Sarah Lawrence College. Okay. And then she was an adjunct professor at Mercy College, teaching critical inquiry courses with a focus on reading fluency, critical thinking, and information literacy. That is extremely hot. We need more smart bimbos in society, well-versed on critical thinking and information literacy. Like, I think at this time, there's nothing more important. Oh my god, and she also got a creative writing certificate from NYU and from 2013 to 2014. And her causes are animal welfare, arts and culture, civil rights and social action, education, human rights, and politics. She's the gay Elle Woods of our time, with like a much deeper voice, which I love. I love an alto baby. But anyway, they get going, they start the competition, everyone is gagging and plugging their nose and having a terrible time, as you can imagine. I personally never care for gross out eating challenges. It's not my bag. I'm not that kind of gal. I don't get off on watching my fellow humans suffer. Call me a square. So what I really got out of this particular competition was being confronted with an area of each of the guys' heads that we are rarely privy to, because it's like an eating contest. They've got their heads down. So we're seeing a lot more angles. We're seeing that top. Probably something that Tila doesn't get to see much of because she's so tiny. I'm sure Amanda is always getting an eyeful, but not Tila. And this is very pertinent information for her because, lest we forget, at this time, Propecia had come out, sure, but it was not mainstream. I would say that Propecia didn't like truly become so obvious and mainstream to everyone until, I don't know, maybe like 2020, like pandemic era, where suddenly we have all of these like virtual doctors and like Hims and Hers and Mailbox RX, where anyone can get some hair pills or dick pills sent to their door. Before, and especially in 2007, you had to go to a dermatologist, and you got to be going to a good dermatologist who's saying, hey, it's looking a little thin on the top there, bud. Here's some Propecia. Back then, you're probably on your own. The men of the world were just like raw dogging their hair follicles. I'm glad today it's so much more widely available and people know more about it for sure. But yet, men have to worry about so little, especially as far as like anxiety over their appearance. And at least losing their hair was one thing that we could lord over them, something that they could be self-conscious about. And now it's just like one more thing that works out seamlessly in men's favor. But from what I could see, Bobby, not looking so good back there. It's not a complete bald spot. We've got like a little crop circle back there. Not quite all filled in. A little crop circle that we could walk through. And I hope it's not a surprise to anyone. I really hope that what he's doing with the front of his hair isn't fooling you. This is a classic case of gelling your hair forward. Just check the corners of that forehead. He's trying a little optical illusion. Trying to confuse the eye that there's actually a robust, thriving hairline. But unfortunately, much like 2007, that hairline is careening towards a recession. Now, Domenico, he's got a gorgeous, silky black mane, true Italian stallion style, which I think is fair. He's a small man. He deserves something. It's hard enough to be a short man and a slight man who loses every competition. So at least he's got a nice head of hair. Ryan, you can see the front. Just imagine what's going on in the back. It's not completely dire, but it's not great. And Steven, unfortunately, a horrible person who deserves no good in this life, is unfortunately a great head of hair. As far as the challenge goes, Vanessa is, it turns out, and I'm not surprised, a nose holder. Which I hate to really like expose myself as like a big Survivor watcher, but I am. On Survivor, there's always a few people in the cast who, when you see them jump into the water, they hold their nose, which I think is real like baby behavior. You're not going to get water up your nose. All you have to do is not inhale. I lose a lot of respect for nose holders. And the same goes for Vanessa here as she eats and holds her nose. It's just don't breathe in. It's simple. So if I had any respect left for Vanessa, who at one time I really enjoyed, if there was any left, it's all gone now. And by the time this episode is over, I had gone into the negative with respect for her. Brandy, adorable as always. Her strategy is to cut up the bull's penis into teeny tiny pieces so she can try and trick her brain into thinking it's a sausage. She realizes, of course, it is not a sausage. I actually feel that her cutting up the meat was really more of like a delay tactic, which I completely respect and would have done. Because you don't want to look like you're not participating and you're not giving it your all. Tila needs to see at all times that you are blindly and mindlessly like doing everything you can for her. Because, of course, that's true love, sacrificing everything for a partner who has not even chosen you yet as their partner and has not agreed to give or sacrifice anything for you. But Brandy's just going to town, cutting up this meat. It's very, you know that SNL sketch back in the day with like Will Ferrell and Gwyneth Paltrow? And I think Amy Poehler. They're playing teenagers and they're cutting up meats and you just hear the scraping of the silverware on the plates. It was very much like that. Bobby takes the challenge pretty well. His rationalization is that it's gross, but it's not going to kill you, so just kind of power through. Which, at face value, that feels like it would be right. But I would feel a little more confident in that if this were, say, Survivor. You know, if we had some more capable hands in charge, some CBS producers. I don't necessarily trust that this meat isn't being carelessly handled by a 21-year-old PA who's not getting paid for overtime and has been working for 12 days straight. And also, like, sure, it won't kill you. Will you get ringworm? A flesh-eating bacteria? Just a tummy ache? You're definitely getting a tummy ache. And the producers did not miss an opportunity to have a little fun with some pre-written cock jokes in the confessionals.
So this is absolutely the first time I've had cock in my mouth, and it's the last time I want to choke on it.
I didn't really feel like eat penis and testicle for lunch. I usually eat it for breakfast.
Bobby wins for the boys, naturally, and Amanda wins for the girls and then immediately throws up, which makes total sense because there must be no greater motivator than giving up 15 years of your meat sobriety. If you're going to do that, then you have to win. The next round, we've gotten a lot grosser.
I have a special delight for the two of you that you will be feasting on. One, there are eyeballs in there because you only have eyes for me. I have a heart in there because this is about love, and a shot of blood to help you get it all down. So the first person to finish that three-course meal will have a special champagne bath with me.
We've got a shot of blood, which Amanda does take like a champ, but it is gruesome just watching the blood dribble from her strong chin. And meanwhile, Bobby goes full American Psycho, just like enjoying himself too much, which I don't know, maybe it's a trauma response. Like you have to like shut your brain down and just go nuts. Amanda just doesn't have a prayer against him. And Bobby wins. He wins the date with Tila. And poor Amanda in her confessionals is just fully in tears, like clearly very much regretting this decision.
I feel bad that I don't get time with her and that I compromise my ethical, like, stance. You know what I mean? Besides that, I probably eat like 5,000 calories of fat.
Then in the next scene, while Bobby is on his date with Tila, the rest of the gang is instructed to make desserts for Tila to enjoy with them after her date. And I'm gonna go as far as to give a trigger warning here. It's not a definitive TW, but brace yourself or hit that scrub button. If today's not the day that you want to hear about a wretched little Abercrombie psycho approaching a woman with excessive force. So they're in the kitchen and everyone's having a great time. Everyone's getting along and they're having a little food fight. They're just like throwing flour on each other, giggling, having a little old guffaw around the kitchen island. And Steven is clearly like getting a little perturbed by this. He clearly has some sort of perhaps type A serial killer-esque attachment to a clean space and order. So he's getting a little annoyed. And then they don't really explain it, but I just surmised it. He picks up like a little cake or a cookie, a little decorated cookie. It appears to be in the spirit of like a Hello Kitty. And he picks up that cookie and it's clear that it's Brandy's cookie or cake, perhaps a tea cake. Again, they just really glossed over that. And he picks it up and he starts taunting Brandy that, like, he's going to destroy it. And she lunges and tries to take it back. And then in turn, he grabs her in, like, just a very tight, violent bear hug that she can't get out of. And you can tell that at first she's trying to be like, oh, I don't care. Yeah, go for it. I'm a tough girl. Like, she's trying to go toe to toe with him. But then she's clearly trying to get away and he is not letting her.
Oh, we're going to show you why you don't do that to Steven.
Oh, you're so strong. Let's see it, Steven. Let's see it. Let's see it. What are you going to do?
I'm going to lesbian handle you.
How are you?
Just a little bit of this.
You better take the knife away right now. From my face? Keep the knife out of my face.
We were wrestling, and he grabs a butter knife, and he's putting it towards my face, and I got pissed, and I slapped him. Because that's not funny. You don't joke around with girls like that.
Like, I thought that Bobby was giving off American Psycho, the way he was eating his, like, bull's eyeballs. But then juxtaposed with this, it's like what Bobby was doing was just pure camp. This is giving off true serial killer dark triad vibes. He's doing this and nobody intervenes except for Amanda. Of course, the two guys are just like, whatever. Like, these men are just the absolute dregs of society. And of course, Vanessa is not going to intervene because she's a maniac. I was really surprised that Danny didn't do anything, but my girl, my queen, Amanda is the only one to put a stop to it. And now, of course, Brandy is very upset and she starts going berserk and starts throwing food at Steven, who then plays it off in the most, like, infuriating way, which I feel like men do a lot, where they do something really rude or mean or violent, and then they just, like, play it off as if they actually didn't do anything. And actually, like, you're a lunatic.
From now on, I am not gonna play with a dramatic lesbian who likes to fight while she's on her period.
And then, of course, Vanessa is loving all of this and then decides to insert herself into the fight. And she promises Brandy that when Tila's her girl, they'll both beat her ass.
And I'm the angry bitch.
Drink your vodka. That's what makes you feel better.
Lying, being a fucking slut, that makes what you feel better.
Okay. There she goes again. It's all about Vanessa always. It's annoying.
I drink vodka, you act like a slut, that's fine.
Yeah, honey, you're the one that's a slut trying to fuck the boys.
As much as I would want to jump over the counter and beat the crap out of Brandy, I wouldn't do that because I'm here for Tila.
Meanwhile, on Bobby and Tila's date, we are treated to something so beautifully of the times. It's a bath and a giant champagne flute. Bobby and Tila ascend a beautiful pink, furry set of stairs, twinkle lights guiding their way. The water is tinted just like the most tasteful, delicate shade of pink. And the jacuzzi water is just bubbling up and it looks like champagne. Now, apparently the champagne glass tub originated in 1984. And I feel like in the early 2000s, there was a big resurgence of women performing in champagne glass tubs, you know, with the Pussycat Dolls, with the resurgence of pinup culture and Dita Von Teese. Like, we were seeing a lot of champagne tubs. And this one really, like, is the piece de resistance of the early 2000s. They just did a fantastic job. In the way that, like, it does not look classy at all, but it's pure camp in a way that only the early 2000s can achieve. So they climb into the champagne bubble bath. Bobby slips and falls like a fucking idiot. And he's so embarrassed. He embarrassed himself in front of Tila. But we're all relieved to see that he recovers. And on this date, Tila, I feel, seems to get vulnerable. She seems to get real. I don't know that I definitely see, like, authentic chemistry between them, but it does seem like she's authentically opening up to him and to us, the audience.
It's a lonely life that I live, you know? It's like people think, party like rock star, it's crazy, but it's so lonely, like...
The first thing I noticed about you is, like, you have this sweet side that just wants someone there to protect them, make sure they're okay, and just to comfort them and have security, you know? And it breaks my heart to know that you haven't had that. But it's also something I want to offer you or try to offer you.
Sometimes it's like, you know what? Maybe I'm just meant to be lonely forever.
But actually, and now that I think about it, I feel like what she's saying is definitely her truth. And she definitely feels that way. But I also get the sense that this is like a company line that she trots out on a lot of dates. gets a sort of, I'm a sad, lonely girl looking for authentic love, but maybe I'll just be lonely forever. And then as we see with Bobby, he takes this hook, line, and sinker. He says a light bulb goes off in his head and makes him realize, I can be this person for Teela. Like, this is my destiny to be this person for her. Teela is cunning. There's no two ways about it. This is a woman who, by sheer grit and determination, got by and got famous, raising herself her entire life. She knows what to say and what to work to get the outcome that she's looking for. And don't get me wrong, like, she is tearing up a little. Like I said, I do think that she on some level feels those things for sure. But I also think it's not unlike an actor where whenever you need it, pull from that emotion and like well up with tears. But I do feel that she authentically is a very lonely person. Now, another thing. Usually when Bobby talks, I go into a mild disassociation, just let a fog wash over me. But this time I really heard his voice. And my God, it's an awful voice. It's like nasally and gravelly and not a voice I could listen to every day as that man's partner. That's all to say that I do not like Bobby or Steven or Ryan. Domenico's okay.
When it all boils down to it at the end of the day, like, you're the last thing I think about and you're the first thing I think about when I wake up in the morning, you know, and it's, I'm not used to that.
My heart just like fluttered a little bit because it's like my hero. How sweet is that?
Teela, don't you be impressed by that. Of course he does. Of course he thinks about you when he wakes up and goes to sleep. He is on a television show where he lives in a house, and every single day he wakes up and tries to get you to fall in love with him. Of course that's going to take up a lot of mental real estate. He's not in the real world. What else does he have to think about right now? I'm sure the producers, the PAs, I'm sure they all think about you when they wake up and go to sleep. This is not an indication of love or devotion. Then Bobby gets a little tingly feeling, and as he explains in his confessional, that unmistakable tingling feeling, it's the telltale sign of being in love.
Everything felt perfect. Then in the bubble bath was, that was it. That was just like, bam, took my breath away, and I knew right there that I love her, that I love Teela. Didn't I tell her that? I love you.
Makes my skin crawl. And Teela receives this cursed information in stride. I'm willing to bet over the course of her adolescent and adult life that there had been a lot of people who have inappropriately whispered in her ear that they love her. So she knows how to take it like a champ. But she says it puts her on the spot because there's other people in the house that she's falling for too. And then they kiss. And in that shot, we get like a really good look at Bobby's back. And let me just say, we've got some pretty serious cystic acne going on back there. So much so that it would lead me to wonder if Bobby is partaking in a little HGH, a little steroid, perhaps. Just overall in this episode, the camera people and editors are really getting some back and aerial shots that are less than savory for these boys.
So after my champagne date with Bobby, I met the rest of the gang out in the back because they made a big festive dessert for me.
Wow, what'd you guys make?
So much.
Awesome. Teela has a literal pep in her step, and you can see her far away in the back of the shot, skipping into the backyard towards the fire pit where the other contestants are waiting to serve her dessert. And I must say, Teela does look adorable. She's wearing what I would describe as the quintessential Hollister backyard bonfire uniform. A look that feels very quaint, very homey, very comforting. She's wearing a knockoff pair of Uggs, and I think they're crocheted or knit. And then she's wearing these cute little short shorts with a small, tasteful little rhinestone detail on the front. And then a very Hollister Abercrombie of the time closet staple. A thin knit long sleeve gray shirt that you can see through with a white tank top underneath. Truly a uniform that was non-negotiable if you were between the ages of about 13 to 30 in the early 2000s. If you were in college, if you were drinking in a clearing in the woods somewhere, if you were a sleepaway summer camp counselor, If you were on a lake trip with your family, if you didn't have this outfit, what would you wear? It's casual, it's breezy, it's cute. It's perfect for any summertime occasion where you're going to be sipping Smirnoff Ice and making memories. So Tila tastes their desserts, and the desserts all look like absolute shit, absolute mess. But then we get a good look at Amanda's, and she's made like, it looks to be an Oreo cheesecake, and it looks quite nice. Quite put together, and this turns out to be Tila's favorite dessert. And Tila also talks about in her confessional how impressed she was that Amanda ate meat for her. That was a plus for Tila, that Amanda would clearly do anything for her, even break something that was so important to her, as opposed to maybe feeling that would show some sort of flimsy commitment to her ideals and values. But we all have different priorities. Domenico's dessert was the worst. We find out that he sprinkled the top of his dessert with cream of tartar, which I will say this, I stopped in my tracks when I heard how Danny pronounced it. I was always under the impression that it was pronounced cream of tartar, so much so that I was like, those fucking idiots. It's not cream of tartar. This isn't a raw meat appetizer. This is an ingredient you put in meringue. And then so I looked it up. And it would turn out that they were correct. And I was just under the impression that the Boston accent with which my mother always pronounced that word, cream of tartar. Cream of tartar. Dara, get the cream of tartar. Tartar. That was not right. It's cream of tartar. Which makes a world of sense looking back. In the backyard, Tila has some one-on-one time with everyone. First, she goes and sits down with Ryan, just the most boring nothing person of all time, who also has a stupid voice. She sits down with Amanda. She sits down with Domenico and gives his tummy a raspberry. Then Tila cuddles up with Danny. And I'll just say this, I don't understand why we really get so little from any of these one-on-ones. I feel like we end up just wasting so much time on these challenges and we don't actually get to hear them talk about anything, but I suppose they want the action of the competitions and of the fighting. It's not like we need to have all the information to make sure that we agree with her decision of who she chooses at the end of the episode. But she's with Danny, they're cuddled up, and all of a sudden dark-eyed Steven decides to interrupt and gets right onto the daybed with his, oh god, with his dirty ass sandals and his bare ass feet. Disgusting. Sandals, shapeless jeans, ugly graphic t-shirt, and a dusting of flour all over his face, his hair, and especially his earlobes for some reason. He just did not have a mind to wipe that off. And a beaded hemp necklace and a black cord necklace. Two necklaces when one's not enough. Steven tries to come in with a stupid joke about having to eat, like, a bull penis and balls because, of course, it's just, like, inherently hilarious. And Danny, of course, is pissed and lets Steven know it, which Tila enjoys because Danny is standing up for her woman, taking charge. But Danny decides to not turn it into a thing and to not argue about it, so she gives Tila a kiss and walks away. Then it's just the two of them alone on the daybed with everyone else 30 feet away or something at the bonfire. And Steven just becomes incredibly inappropriate.
Steven was just trying to kiss me and I'm like, okay, that was a little bit too aggressive. And then he just like jumps on me. It's as if he wasn't kissing me with feeling. It was as if he was kissing me for just to compete. It was kind of gross. It really turned me off.
Hey, was that to get back at Danny?
Hey, that was because I earned it.
Is right. That made me immediately Google Steven, a shot at love, arrested? ? You just get a very distinct sense that he has done this many times to a much more dire outcome. I spent like a good half hour trying to find this guy because I was just like, where is this person? What havoc hath this man wrought on society in the last 15 plus years? And I was looking him up, first name and last name, and nothing comes up, which does make me think, did this show ruin his life? Or he just doesn't exist and this was an actor because he's not listed on the IMDb. He definitely looks like some sort of model turned struggling actor, and his job description was club promoter. I know that there are real people who have that job, especially in the early 2000s, but still seems like a fake job. I don't know, he doesn't feel like a club promoter to me. He feels like someone who runs up his credit card and puts himself into debt to buy bottle service every weekend, but he doesn't feel like a club promoter. And his name is Steven Richardson, like the most ungoogleable name. I think he might be fake. Then Tila sits down with Brandy, and Vanessa, again, does just what Steven does and comes over and interrupts Tila's alone time with Brandy. And Brandy, like Danny, decides to be the bigger person and gets up and leaves. But the damage is done because Tila's already sick of the drama between Vanessa and Brandy from the last episode. And then Vanessa pulls this, and Tila just can't take it anymore. There's just too much drama.
And there's been enough drama.
Then the next morning, the contestants wake up to another message in a bottle from Tila saying that it's time to put up or shut up. Meet me in the living room. XO Tila. In the living room, Tila instructs everyone to take a dry erase board and write down who in the group they believe Tila's most compatible with besides themselves. Everyone goes around the room and reveals who they chose. Bobby chooses Brandy as the most compatible, despite the fact that he says that he doesn't really like her and she doesn't really like him. Vanessa shocks everyone and chooses Brandy as well because she and Brandy are so similar. So if Vanessa is the most compatible with Tila, then the second most compatible person must be the person most like Vanessa, which is Brandy. Danny chooses Domenico and in doing so reveals that they have basically become best friends. Steven chooses Bobby because of course he's going to choose a man with spiky hair such as his. Spiky brown hairs is something that Steven can wrap his head around. Brandy chooses Amanda. Domenico, of course, chooses Danny, his best friend. Amanda also chooses Danny. So with that, Danny has the most votes for compatibility, and she wins some alone time with Tila before the elimination that evening. Then Tila has them all go around and write down who they think is the least compatible with Tila, which is where things start to get thorny. Steven and Ryan both choose Domenico, which makes Domenico cry. And he says that he doesn't really hang out with the boys, so that's probably why they didn't choose him. Domenico definitely seems like a softer boy who would gravitate more towards the feminine energy, which is the only kind of guy I deign to be around. Vanessa chooses Ryan because he's so, like, forgettable, and she often forgets his name, despite living in a house with him for days on end. Then literally everyone else chooses Vanessa, of course. Brandy's the last person to show her board.
I think that Vanessa is the least compatible.
Can I say one other thing? Brandy told me, and I'm not a snitch, but she said, I don't know if I want a guy or a girl.
Wow, Vanessa, you are really gonna fucking be a conniving liar?
I'm not, though. I'm not lying to you. I liked you. That's why.
What?
So if anybody's deceiving anybody here, it's not me. I've been the realest person here. I've been the most honest person here.
On everything. I really like Vanessa's person, but I promise you, I know you know it's real from the bottom of my heart. I've never, ever once would ever say that because I know what I want. This is exactly why I picked you as the least compatible, because I see right through you and I told everyone, but I would never deliberately fucking lie.
Now, Vanessa has tears streaming down her face for this whole thing, but also looks to be trying to hold back a smirk. Like, she's a real little evil little scamp. She's giving evil leprechaun. Like, I can just picture her in a little top hat running around terrorizing a young Jennifer Aniston in 1993. Just having a blast, wreaking havoc, causing chaos, committing murder. And meanwhile, poor Brandy is absolutely losing it right now over this. She says Vanessa's lying, which I'm sure she is. From the beginning of the show, she didn't really give off that she's hetero-curious. But in a twist, Tila reveals that because everyone voted Vanessa as the least compatible, Vanessa gets to have dinner with Tila before the elimination, which of course everyone thinks is a grand injustice.
I'm approaching my date with Tila tonight as an opportunity. I don't want Dale to see me upset and crying. I don't want her to see me mad. I want her to see this.
As much as I have a hard shell, inside I'm soft. After I beat the shit out of somebody, I go home and I cry.
The look on Tila's face when she says this, she is visibly gooped and gagged, but like in a bad way. And then you can tell that Vanessa's time on the show is done because the rest of the date goes pretty poorly.
I don't feel the need to sit here and get all deep and ask you 1,000 questions.
She didn't ask me one question the whole date.
You might hate on me because I'm real and I'm telling you that. That's where I come from.
No, but you gotta understand where I'm coming from. I'm not saying you.
I mean them.
Right. I seriously like didn't say 2 words that whole date.
So you think maybe it's like
I feel like a jealousy thing. I really do. Okay. And as a go-go dancer, I have a lot of friends.
I ate my dinner and let her just keep talking. I wouldn't even have to look at her and she'll keep talking.
I'm sick of sticking up for myself and defending myself. I know who I am.
Blah, blah, blah.
I'm not confused about who I am. Wah, wah, wah. I don't care what other people feel. Wah, wah, wah. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It was, like, so strenuous to go through that.
After that, Tila moves on to the dessert course with Danny. And Tila says that she can tell that Danny's, like, really starting to come out of her shell. And then, unfortunately, Danny does, in fact, drop an R-bomb, which... have we gotten through a single episode without one? It was surprising to have it come from Danny, but it is pretty representative of the times. It was a word that was wheeled and dealed pretty easy breezily. My God, my senior year English teacher would drop one all the time. A teacher. This teacher was an absolute menace to society, and I may or may not have indirectly gotten her fired. Anyway, all that to say, it was a slur thrown around quite a bit in 2007. As far as Danny goes, I think she's fine. I know she seems like a very likable person, very non-threatening, so nice. But I don't feel as though there's like a whole lot to sink your teeth into, like there is with my dear sweet Amanda. But that's just my personal preference. I like a person with a little more joie de vivre. But Danny seems like a nice, reliable partner. Finally, it's time for elimination. Amanda's chosen first, which is a nice consolation prize for having given up 15 years of meat sobriety. Bobby is given a key after her, then for some reason Ryan. I simply do not know what she sees in him. I guess he's just been able to skate by through the middle as one of the less offensive men still remaining. After that, she chooses Danny. Danny after Ryan, which is surprising. By now, Brandy is... fully losing it. She is bawling, she is crying, she is writhing in her chair. Then she chooses Domenico, and we're down to the final three. Her first elimination of the night goes to Steven. But before I get to that, I'm on a still of Steven's face right now, and I really wish that they had hired whatever PA is on Survivor who's in charge of SPF duty. Who's in charge of making sure everyone's slathered and gathered. Because every last one of these boys clearly do not know how to apply sunscreen, which is true of most men. It drives me absolutely batshit bonkers the way men just seem to refuse or are so indignant about using a sunscreen. Every last one of them is sunburnt, and I just feel like I'm on spring break. I just hate looking at their red, tan, bloated faces, like they just fell asleep on a pool raft with a Four Loko in their hand. But Tila informs Steven that his shot at love has ended, and there's just like this long, drawn-out, pregnant pause where we're all just like waiting on bated breath to see what this maniac is about to say. And it just feels like, oh, we're about to get a second Ashley on our hands. Like, this maniac is going to go berserk. What is he going to do?
I don't have anything to apologize about. It's your decision. As long as you're happy. All of you guys, may the best man win.
A rare occasion where a man surprises me. It's now down to Brandy and Vanessa. The editors still draw out the tension of who Tila's going to choose, and just as we suspect, Tila tells Brandy she still has a shot at love. She lifts her foot to take a step to retrieve the key to Tila's heart when Vanessa, in the most violent way possible, grabs Brandy by the hair, yanks her away, and they start going after it. And I will say, I did not see that coming. I shrieked. I shrieked like a raccoon got into the house. Because it's just so violent. Like, Vanessa is going absolutely berserk. And Brandy, of course, is meeting her right where she is, and they are just on the floor going after each other. Ryan and Danny jump in and try and pull them apart. It's not working. Then the producers come and start pulling them apart. In the melee, they knock over the little silver key ring statue, and it hits the ground and immediately breaks. It appears to be made of spray-painted silver styrofoam. There's heels flying, there's dresses pulled up, thonged butts in the air. And then they cut to a shot of Teela, and she is legit crying. Like, her bottom lip is, like, shaking. She seems genuinely freaked out. Vanessa is truly belligerent. They have four guys on her, and they have her pinned on her back to the ground, and they just grab all of her appendages and haul her off as she's screaming. And she's doing some really lovely physical comedy. She really is. They're trying to haul her away, and she grabs a door frame, and she won't let go, and they're just trying to pull her off. Like a little Hollywood chimpanzee who's finally had enough. And then Vanessa's over by the bar, and there's a handler trying to get her out of there. Ryan comes over and tries to talk some sense into her, not understanding that nothing will talk sense into her except for a tranquilizer dart. She knocks some glasses off the top of the bar. They let go of Brandy. She's not going after anyone anymore, but she's extremely upset. Vanessa's just screaming about Brandy. And Brandy is just crying and overwhelmed, and suddenly she just rushes over to Teela and grabs her face in a way that must have been quite jarring for Madame Tequila. For a split second, I was like, is Teela safe? Is this okay? Like, she grabs her face and gets so close to her in a way that is very intimate. It's very Baz Luhrmann's Romeo plus Juliet, like, they're trying to keep us apart, but I love you.
I'm in love with you. I can't do this anymore.
Ask them. Everybody knows who I'm here for. It's for you. Ask them. They know, all know she's hiding something.
Then they bring in another guy, the biggest guy of all, who just swoops in, grabs Vanessa by the waist, and just picks her up like a paper bag full of groceries. Effortlessly swoops her down the stairs. Now we have Brandy saying she has to leave, and Vanessa saying she won't leave. Vanessa is about to breach the threshold of the home. She stops short on the hot pink shag rug, and she collapses to her knees, then falls to her side, and we have a match cut to the giant broken key splayed on the floor, shattered, to be continued. And on that cliffhanger, we conclude the recap of episode 6 of A Shot at Love with Teela Tequila. As always, I'm Darlene Sussman, and I'll see you next time.